We will talk with Democratic U.S. Representative Ron Kind for this next half hour, talking about the budget deal and the farm bill. And we will welcome your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, December 12th. Ron Kind is a Democratic U.S. representative from Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District, which covers the southwestern and western parts of the state. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy, and happy holiday to you and your listeners.
Thank you very much, and the same to you.
Happy holiday louder than a discussion about federal budget issues in the Farm Bill, right?
Yeah,
but we'll do our best.
But, you know, I just heard an NPR News representative Kind that the House votes on this budget deal today, and it includes an extension of the Farm Bill. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, obviously there's not going to be a comprehensive reauthorization of a Farm Bill done before the end of this year. If we don't do that, a lot of programs lapse back to 1940s policy, and here we are in the 21st century, not least of which milk prices would be adversely impacted. We could potentially see milk jump to 10 bucks a gallon if no short-term action is taken, and no one really wants to see that. So unfortunately, because of the lack of progress on a bigger farm bill, there's going to have to be a short-term extension, and that's trying to be included in this budget agreement.
Well, and I was approaching this interview thinking that we were going to fall off the dairy cliff, but apparently this will at least postpone that for a while.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of misunderstanding about it, but it really does not make sense that we revert back to a law back in 1948 when we're dealing with the 21st century challenges. And yeah, some farmers might say, you know, what's wrong with a huge increase in price? Well, that's more money in our pocket. But the big concern is consumers would immediately switch their choice. There's no one's going to go into a grocery store and pay for milk at that price. And my fear is when they do, it's hard to get them back. And that could devastate the dairy industry, especially fluid milk consumption in the future.
Yeah. So is this bipartisan budget deal, which includes a temporary extension of the farm bill, a done deal, or is this going to pass?
I think it will. And first, let me offer a couple areas of criticism just to get it off my chest. Now, I would have much preferred to see a long-term deficit reduction agreement to get our fiscal house in order. This doesn't do it, although I think it is a step in the right direction. This does not include the extension of unemployment benefits that expires at the end of the year. That will adversely impact close to 100,000 Wisconsinites who are out trying to search for a job. I know my colleagues on the other side claim that the extension encourages idleness and those not actively seeking work. And I'm sure there's some abuses in that area. But when 3 workers are out looking for every 1 job opening, it's clear that the market hasn't recovered. The economy's not strong enough for them to be absorbed again with decent paying jobs. So I think the human and decent thing to do is extend those benefits, continue to work hard to get this economy where it needs to be so they can go out and get gainful employment. And we're not there yet. And then finally, it doesn't include addressing the debt ceiling. That's going to be coming up again next spring. And I am sure that without that being included, it's going to be a point of hostage taking. And we're going to go up to the brink again of possibly defaulting on our financial obligations for the first time in our nation's history, possibly becoming a deadbeat nation and the financial turmoil that will create both at home and abroad. And that's not being dealt with. But having said that, this may be the best the Congress can do at the current moment. Sometimes we got to learn how to walk together a little bit before we can trot and run. And this is a product of some give and take and compromise. And this is what divided government is supposed to look like. Everyone will be able to point to certain things and say, I wish that wasn't in there. But again, that's the consequences of having divided government and people having to sit down and talk and work through these issues.
Yeah, what's good about the budget deal?
Well, the best thing, it provides 2 years of stability and certainty instead of the dysfunction coming out of Washington. It's going to avert a government shutdown again come January, and that's when the next trigger point was going to hit if something wasn't agreed to. And that may allay concerns with businesses and families alike and settle things down in that regard so they can go out and start making decisions and longer-term decisions that will help economic growth and job creation rather than waiting for the next crisis to materialize here in Washington. It does address some of the shortfalls with the so-called sequestration, some of the devastating cuts that are happening in basic research and in education and job training programs and some of our infrastructure, along with some of the deeper cuts that we're going to hit military readiness come January. It doesn't fix the entire problem, but it does provide some relief in those areas.
Yes.
You see, I've been concerned that we're doing everything backwards out here, Joy, when it comes to the type of economic growth that we need. Those programs we should be investing in to keep us competitive, to keep us innovative in the 21st century global economy, those are the ones that are being slashed the most and deepest right now. And then our long-term unfunded liabilities, there's been very little action on it. And most economists will say it's the longer-term stuff that we've got to be focused on rather than cutting education and job training and research and broadband expansion and literally the seed corn that we need to be planting today to reap a bountiful harvest and to ensure our children are competitive in the future. So we're doing it backwards, and if we continue this, it's going to hurt our economic competitiveness for years to come.
But to clarify, the across-the-board sequester cuts are going away with this budget deal, but there still will be more targeted budget cuts?
Well, sequester isn't going away entirely. There's some relief over the next 2 years under this two-year budget agreement. And then the sequester goes right back to where they were in the past for the remaining 7 years. And that's indiscriminate. It's across the board, regardless of the consequences or our competitive advantages that we enjoy. And that's why I've called sequestration Latin for stupid spending cuts, because that's what they are. We're not making the key distinctions in the budget of what are important investments we should be making as a nation to move forward in the century, and where is the waste and the inefficiencies and the reform that we should be doing. And I think one area that's ripe for more reform, quite frankly, a lot of these commodity programs in the Farm Bill, huge taxpayer subsidies going to a few but very large agribusiness, which is not fiscally responsible, and it distorts agricultural policies, and it's leading to more consolidation in production agriculture, and it has been abused. In fact, the recent report showed that we're sending hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars to multi-billionaires who aren't even farming. They're getting these payments just because they own the land. This is crazy, and I think the typical farmer understands this is crazy, but we're not addressing that in the Farm Bill discussions right now.
And the this extension of the current Farm Bill in this budget deal will keep the current Farm Bill in place for how long?
Yeah, I haven't seen the last language. It could be just a month to keep pressure on the budget conferees to continue the negotiations. It might be a little bit longer than that, but nevertheless, it will address that cliff that would hit on January 1st if nothing is done.
We are talking with Ron Kind, Democratic U.S. Representative from Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. We are talking about the budget deal that the House votes on today that was reached this week by the Congressional Budget Committee, led in part by Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan. And we're welcoming your reactions to this. It does include a temporary extension of the Farm Bill, so we will avoid falling off the so-called dairy cliff. And we wonder if that's a relief to you. We wonder if you like what's in this budget deal or not, and why or why not. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We did, by the way, reach out to several of Wisconsin's Republican congressional delegates, but they were unavailable to join us during this hour. We will instead get some more analysis and reaction from a political scientist coming up after 7:30. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to be talking with Ron Kind, Democratic U.S. Representative from Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. We are talking about the budget deal that will be voted on today in the House, and welcoming your questions, your reactions, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We had also planned on talking in some depth about a new farm bill, but nothing new was reached before the end of the year. There will be a temporary extension of the farm bill in this budget deal that'll be voted on today, so we can avoid falling off the dairy cliff. Joseph on Facebook says the farm bill includes very harmful elements such as weakening of farm animal welfare requirements and even a move by Republicans to cut food stamps. It's these other items buried in the bill that are very bad. The scare tactics that milk will be $10 a gallon is a technique to get people to ignore the issues and just support a bill without knowing what's in it. Also, the subsidies for corporate farms are not needed and are abused. Well, I think you're not thrilled with the subsidies for corporate farms either, Representative Kine, but what about this... the dairy cliff was just a scare tactic, that the farm bill is bad.
Well, it sounds like we're on the same page, and he's paying very close attention to what's happening, because I can't dispute what he's saying. But clearly the dairy cliff had to be addressed, and I don't think it's a head and shoulders fake, because we're still going to have a debate on that final farm bill when it comes up for consideration. And I've been leading the charge for more meaningful reforms, not only with the subsidy programs that are going up that I think are over the top, and I would think most family farmers in Wisconsin would agree, because they are the ones who pay most of closest attention to the abuses that are taking place. And in fact, one that I'm trying to shut down is so-called a multiple entity rule. There are some farm operations that claim they have 15, 16 farm managers on the same farm, and therefore each one of them can qualify for the same amount of subsidies. Talk about double dipping in the system. And that's not being addressed, but there are additional shortfalls. Coming out of the House, there was $40 billion of cuts in the nutrition program, which will primarily impact low-income children, individuals with disability, older Americans. Is this the segment of our nation's population that you want to be targeting for cost savings when you have multi-billionaires receiving subsidies under the Farm Bill? I don't think so. And I'm also troubled by the $7 billion of proposed cuts under the conservation title, making it harder for our farmers to be good stewards of their land. That will lead, I think, to farming practices with more runoff from nutrition or from sediment and nutrients flowing into our rivers and lakes and streams. And if you don't have quality water supplies in your community, it's tough to have a sustainable environment then. So that, too, I think is a problem spot with the Farm Bill. So I think there's a lot more work that needs to go into this to get it in proper shape. But we need to get moving, because, unfortunately, our farmers are being held hostage to the dysfunction coming out of Washington. They need to know what the next 5 years are going to look like under a Farm Bill so they can plan accordingly.
Yeah. And does it look like down the road when these negotiations start again that we're going to have big, deep cuts in the SNAP or food stamp program?
Well, that, of course, is what's being negotiated right now. And I think Speaker Boehner, again, has got a tiger by the tail with the so-called Tea Party caucus. I don't think they will support a farm bill at the end of the day unless it does contain those cuts. So if Speaker Boehner wants to pass a farm bill, he can't have those cuts in it and yet get a majority of votes in both the House and the Senate, nor would the president sign a bill calling for such drastic reduction in nutrition programs when there's such need out there throughout the country today. So this is what is making the negotiations very difficult. But I would also like to continue to shine light on these subsidy programs and where the money is going. And the other problem I see is the crop insurance program. Representative Petri and I from Wisconsin teamed up to offer a crop insurance reform amendment, because right now, under this farm bill, these private crop insurance companies are guaranteed a 14% profit margin. They bear very little risk, and we pay their entire operating and maintenance costs. There's not a business in the world that wouldn't sign up for that offer. So why are we doing it in this farm bill? And 5 of the 10 largest private insurance companies are foreign-owned. They're the ones who will be receiving the money. And this is another example of the fiscal irresponsibility of these policies in the Farm Bill that should get cleaned up in order to move forward on this.
A call from Josh in La Crosse. Hello, Josh.
Good morning, Joy. Morning, Representative Kind. I have a quick question. I'm a federal employee. I live in La Crosse, and I saw on the PBS NewsHour last night that part of this budget includes an increase in federal employee pension, how much we pay into our pension. And without an inflationary raise in the last 3 years, I'm wondering how impactful this increase in pension contribution will be. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Yeah, Josh, you're right. But what's key and the key distinction in this is that's for new workers, not those workers in the current workforce. So it wouldn't impact you. It'll only be for new hires. Right now, it's about a 0.8% share. Employees are being asked to contribute to their pension fund. This would go up to about 1.3%. So not a drastic increase, but most of the bipartisan budget commissions, and including President Obama's own budget that he submitted, says a slight adjustment upwards is a responsible thing to do, and more in line with what the private sector is showing out there as well. So not current workers, future workers, but it is in there.
Five more minutes with Ron Kind, Democratic U.S. Representative from Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District, talking with us about the Farm Bill and the budget deal. 1-800-642-1234. Have time for another call or two for him. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. An email from Andrew who wants to know, what is the actual maximum number of unemployment insurance months available to an individual? And what is being sought with the proposed extension, which of course you say the unemployment benefit extension is not in this budget deal?
Yeah, normally it's a 27-week period where they can claim unemployment benefits, but to do so, they got to be actively searching for work. And listen, I'm all for increased oversight to go after those who are taking advantage of the system or maybe not being aggressive enough and getting into the workforce, and that's fine. But the extension that was passed a couple of years ago would set that out to 99 weeks instead of 27, reflecting current market realities, the great recession that we're coming out of, the tremendous number of jobs that were lost, and they haven't fully recovered to pre-recession level yet. I think that's also an important distinction to make. We're just now starting to see some better job growth numbers this year, and it appears as if things are gaining traction, but we're still not quite there. So we're calling for another one-year extension to give time for this economy to fully recover and try to get to at least pre-recession levels again when it comes to employment opportunities.
So what are those people supposed to do?
Well, they're going to be cut off. And, you know, what's unfortunate is most economists say if this happens, we will lose an additional 250,000 jobs because this money that goes into these people's pockets, they need it. They will spend it. They'll spend it locally in local businesses, which helps stimulate the local economy as well. But if you take that out of the system, not only will they be left on their own, and I'm not sure what they'll do as a plan B, but it will definitely have an adverse economic impact that will lead to more job loss rather than helping the economic recovery. And I don't know why the Congress continues to shoot itself in the foot when it comes to taking measures that can help the economy along. Instead, we seem to be the worst enemy to economic growth right now rather than truly partnering with the private sector to get things going.
Rana in Clayton is with us now. Hi, Rana.
Hi, Joy. Hello, Representative Kind. I just wanted to thank you for your work with the Farm Bill. I'm an agriculture education instructor in Northwest Wisconsin, and I have many students interested in going into production agriculture in many of the different areas. However, one of the stopping points for them is when they're seeing their families struggle, they're hearing all of the different concerns that there are with different bills and different things, and it prevents them from going into that. And as you know, that's one of our major employers in the state of Wisconsin are people involved with agriculture. So I just want to thank you for your work, and keep up the good job.
Well, thank you. And that's one of the tragedies and what's being debated out here is we need that next generation to be able to step up and take over. You know, the average farm age now in Wisconsin, roughly 58, 59. So, but a lot of these policies are geared to large agribusiness interests that gobble up small farms, leading to greater consolidation, driving up land values, making it harder for new beginning farmers to enter the occupation when we need them now more than ever. And I'd like to see more focus on what we can do to help new beginning farmers get going, because we've got to sustain this. But a lot of the policies work against them and work against family farm operations overall, because they're not big enough in order to compete with the large agribusinesses and that. And that, I think, is going to continue to erode the diversification we need in production agriculture. And she's right. It is still the number one industry in the state of Wisconsin, employing more people directly or indirectly. So making sure we get these policies right is very, very important for our state's economy.
Yeah, well, in our final minute here, you and two other Democratic congressmen wrote a letter to Speaker Boehner and Majority Leader Eric Cantor to keep loopholes for multimillionaires closed in the final bill. What are those loopholes?
Yeah, you know, again, I mentioned the GAO report that came out showing that, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars of subsidies are going to those multi-billionaires. You know, Paul Allen of Microsoft was one. When we followed up and asked Paul why he's receiving these subsidies, he didn't even know he was getting them. But merely because he was the landowner, they came automatically to him. So instances like that, I mean, if we can't even deal with something as simple as that, then what are we really doing with this farm bill ultimately? Especially when you're talking at the same time of $40 billion worth of cuts to low-income children, and you're going to continue these subsidies to multi-billionaires? I think they got it backwards.
Well, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Joy.
Ron Kind, Democratic U.S. Representative from Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District, which covers southwestern and western parts of the state, plus parts of north-central Wisconsin as well. Again, we did invite a number of Wisconsin's Republican congressional members to join us, but they were unavailable to do so at this time. So we'll talk with a political scientist about the politics of the budget deal coming up after the news. We just heard from Democratic U.S. Representative Ron Kind in our last half hour, and as we mentioned, our invitations to Republican congressional delegation members were declined for this hour, so we reached out to a political scientist to get more reaction and analysis on the politics and the implication of the budget deal that was reached this week and that the House votes on today. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 7:37 on this Thursday, December 12th, and we will continue to take your questions and your reactions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let me welcome our guest. Very happy to have back with us Joe Heim, Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse.
Good morning, Joy.
Good morning. It's good to talk to you again.
Yes, there is.
Let's talk about this budget deal. So you say that this is a pretty small budget deal, but about as good an agreement as we're going to get?
It sure is. It's, to quote different people, I think Speaker Boehner called it a modest in scale. And this is really a small step forward, basically. It indicates that the Congress can, in fact, get something done.
Yeah, so what did Republicans get that they wanted?
Well, they built into this, Paul Ryan, by the way, is, it's interesting how the very conservative groups are attacking him already, but he sees this as a benefit because there will not be a government shutdown. I think people in Washington, especially congressmen and senators, Republicans, recognize the damage done to their party because of this. He feels this will help rebuild trust in Congress, create some increased civility. And the part that he emphasizes the most is it reduces the debt over a 10-year period.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the Republicans obviously want. But obviously this is not, because there's revenues involved in this, there are some Republicans, certainly, that are opposed to it already.
Right. And seeing some stories that House Speaker John Boehner is smacking down the Tea Party over their budget complaints. They're not happy with it, and Boehner essentially lashed out at them. What's going on there?
I think I'll quote him. He called this ridiculous, the fact that the groups basically opposed to it immediately before they even read it.
Yeah.
He thought that was ridiculous. There was a news story over the wire over the evening that talked about exposing the GOP civil war, that the insiders in Washington basically are going to support this, the leadership, and interest groups out there are very much opposed to it.
Well, why are they so opposed to it?
Well, apparently they were pretty happy with the cuts. The sequester of 2011 actually did substantial cuts in government, although you could argue with what constitutes substantial, and they were happy with it. And the irony, some Republicans opposed it, of course, because of it was half defense discretionary and half non-defense discretionary, and that really damaged defense. But all in all, more conservative groups felt that this is the first time that the federal budget was under some control, and therefore this loosens those controls, and that's what they oppose.
Yeah, now the sequester cuts are limited, but they're not completely gone, is that right?
That's correct. I've seen two different numbers, as low as two-thirds, as high as 83%, being essentially replacing something like $63 billion in sequester cuts over a two-year period. And basically replace that with cuts and fees that have been increased. Some of that Congressman Kine mentioned, for example.
Yeah, he said that these indiscriminate across the board cuts that are hurting research and science and technology and all sorts of things that we don't need to be cutting right now were being cut by the sequester cuts. But do we know what's not going to be cut and what is?
Well, this is he called it, I wrote it down, stupid spending cuts, because they were pretty much across the board, and there really wasn't much flexibility. The Congress basically operates in a two-step process. What this is a framework that the Congress has to follow, and by the way, say follow means that the Appropriations Committee still have to pass 12 spending bills. So they are going to have the ability to modify within certain guidelines. In other words, the framework, the authorization framework, which hopefully Congress will pass, they will be able to push those cuts and use cuts against certain things and other things not. In other words, in the past, they really didn't have that flexibility, and in the future, apparently, they will. And that's what they're going to have to be working on the next month or two.
So Democrats get what they wanted out of this budget deal?
Well, the same thing that Paul Ryan said. There's no government shutdown, although you could argue whether that was politically good or bad. But essentially, this is a small step forward for them as well. They get some relief from the spending cuts, and that's what I think most of them wanted, especially the non-defense discretionary cuts. These were damaging to the very people that support the Democrats. There are some Democrats, however, out there. Don't assume that this is automatic. I found it very interesting that the farm bill must have been slipped in at the very end yesterday because I have a quote here that Senator Reid said, he will not extend, this is a quote, I will not extend the current budget without a new bill. Well, that's exactly what this does. It extends it, at least for a month or two, according to the congressman. The Democrats are opposed to this for two reasons, at least the few that have talked about it so far. Mainly it has to do with, as Congressman Kine said, the extension of the federal unemployment benefits. That was a key feature, and that is going to lose some Democratic votes. Also, there was a story over the wire last night that talked about a dock fix. I'm not sure exactly what this means, but I think what it means is that they're essentially going to allow doctors to increase their fees or continue to maintain their fees. There's elements in here which would have cut the Medicare reimbursements for doctors, and apparently the Republicans have included a so-called doc fix in this proposal, and some Democrats really object to that.
Yeah, I'm glad that I wasn't the only one surprised about the farm bill being a part of this budget deal, because we thought we were going to talk separately about that, but now the farm bill is, for those listeners just joining us, is a part of this budget deal. At least it temporarily extends the current farm bill, so then we're not going to we were going to fall off the dairy cliff if we didn't have an agreement on a farm bill before the end of the year. Something about reverting back to 1948 or something like that.
Yeah, there were some scare stories out yesterday that indicated that milk was likely going to skyrocket up to $7 a gallon. Well, those are scare tactics. But essentially, the assumption was, as of January 1st, without a new five-year reauthorization, That could very well have happened. That's what their suggestion is. Both the Senate and the House had passed their own separate farm bills, but they could not agree primarily on, as the congressman said, on subsidy limits, but also, more importantly, on the issue of nutrition, food stamps, things of that sort. That, the House basically wanted further cuts in food stamps, and the Senate wanted smaller cuts, frankly.
Yeah. So what we heard on NPR that it is likely this will pass the House, but not guaranteed. What's your assessment?
I think this is still a very fluid situation. I don't think there is an automatic guarantee. There are people that immediately responded, and as I said, the conservative groups basically out there, and their supporters are opposed to it. Some of the prominent senators, for example, Rand Paul opposed it immediately. Marco Rubio opposed it. Senator Orrin Hatch said he was leaning against it. So it's not automatic. At least the irony of this is that it may very well pass the House more clearly, but the Senate, I think, is a little more up in the air.
Yeah. So what happens if it doesn't pass?
We have a government shutdown in the middle of January. You and I both know that Congress seems to work under deadlines really well. The irony of this is that this is happening about a month prior to the actual potential shutdown in the middle of January. And for Congress to actually do this early and have a committee that actually works, frankly, is sort of astounding given the environment out there. So this is an early attempt essentially to show that Congress can operate.
We are talking with Joe Heim, professor of political science at UW La Crosse, talking about the politics of this bipartisan budget deal reached this week. The House votes on it today. The Senate is, I think, going to be voting on it next week. Do you want this to pass or not? And why or why not? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on our Facebook page at The Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 12 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Thursday, December 12th. We are talking about the budget deal that was reached this week and that the House votes on today. The U.S. House is on track to vote today on this bipartisan budget deal reached by House Budget Chairman Paul Ryan and Senate Budget Chairwoman Patty Murray, and we're talking about what's in this budget deal, what objections there are to this budget deal, and we're wondering what questions you have. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And we wonder if you want this deal to pass or not. It would avert a government shutdown coming up in mid-January. Our guest, Joe Heim, professor of political science at UW La Crosse, says that it's not a done deal, that this budget deal will pass. He says it's very fluid, and if it doesn't pass, the government shuts down next month. What do you want to see happen? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And Professor Heim, besides the government shutdown deadline, isn't there another debt ceiling deadline coming up?
Yes, it is. The date hasn't been specified just yet, but this brings some point. In fact, that's what one of the things that Congressman Kind said, that the debt ceiling is not being addressed in this thing. That's unfortunate because we could very well go through the same type of situation that we had in the past, and I don't think we want to go through that again. But, yeah, that's going to reoccur in spring, and this is not part of it.
Yeah, so there's nothing in this bill that says that we're going to. Does Congress have to agree to raise the borrowing limit again?
Yes. One of the things that occurred to me is that perhaps the farm bill, which as of 2 days ago was not included, obviously sometime yesterday was slipped back into this thing. I wondered whether or not that was intended to pick up some Democratic votes. For example, Congressman Kind might have been opposed to it. Because of the lack of extension of federal unemployment benefits, but with the farm bill extension, uh, I imagine that's going to pick up a few senators and congressmen that are very concerned about that particular issue.
Yeah, interesting. Well, why is it that the extension of unemployment benefits is so controversial?
Well, this has become a very ideological issue. The Democrats obviously favor it. It's been continually extended time after time. And I think we all know that unemployment is still hovering at the 7% level. There are millions of people that are frankly, long-term unemployed. And something like 1.2 million people will be cut off of it as of January 1st. And without that part of this, that is going to occur. It seemed pretty clear it's going to occur. Senator Reid, I believe, said that they will address this in January sometime, but that does not mean at all that anything is going to pass both houses, basically. Republicans oppose it because they believe that there are millions of people out there that are just living in the dole and are happy with it, and this does not encourage them to go back to work, frankly. So that's it's a very ideological, very partisan approach to the whole issue.
And one of the stumbling blocks with getting a new farm bill was because Republicans pulled the SNAP program or the food stamps program out of the farm bill and wanted to cut it drastically. And what's going to happen there?
That's another issue, frankly. Mm-hmm. And the Senate basically passed the farm bill, which had higher supports than the House. The House had lower dairy price supports, but they also had much more substantial cuts in the food stamp and nutrition programs. The Senate, run by Democrats, obviously opposed that, those kind of expansive cuts. What's probably going to happen is somewhere in between, they're simply going to have to agree on a dollar amount, halfway one way or the other. You can kind of predict that in advance if they get something done. But it really depends on just how much the Democrats are willing to accept in terms of cuts in food stamps. That's the key issue here, frankly. Although the subsidy limits, as the congressman said, are a sticking point as well. Some of the larger groups basically, this is ironic, but apparently they have a provision in their proposed bill that would cut the subsidy limits and management fees to $125,000. It's a question of, strangely enough, it's a question of how many managers a farm has. Some of these have, I think the congressman said, in excess of 10 or more. And each one would get $125,000 in terms of subsidies, management fees. And he thought that was ridiculous, and I think a lot of people do. So this is one of the hang-ups, basically.
John in Somerset is with us now. Hi, John.
Hi. Yeah, I was going to say that we're running a deficit. We got the GDP is, let's say, at 105%. You know, a 17 in the, you know, the GDP is more or less than what we're taking in. So that ain't going to work, and we're going to become like Greece or, you know, Cyprus. You know.
Are we going? We're going to go belly up, Representative. I'm sorry, I called you Representative Professor Heim.
Well, the issue here basically is how bad is it? We're at $17 trillion and it's rising. The annual deficit, however, has been declining. It looks like it's going to peak out, if that's the right word to use here, at around $400 billion a year, which, relatively speaking, is a lot better than the 1.5 that we were at several years back. The fact is, however, it appears as if there's going to be a deficit as far as the eye can see. And the fact that this particular proposal included $22.5 billion in deficit reduction over a 10-year period doesn't impress anybody, frankly. I mean, and much of this, by the way, is being kicked down the line, and most of it is going to occur at the end of the 10-year period. So it's a lot of people object to that, and there really isn't. And as the congressman said, there's no real deficit debt ceiling issue in it, and there's no deficit reduction of any substantial way. But this is a first step.
Yeah, there are. This budget deal does not, for one, address any Social Security or Medicare. I should say Medicare.
No, Medicare is involved in this. Medicaid and Social Security are not involved in this in any way, shape, or form. But Medicare reimbursements are, and that's sort of one of the rubs here. That's why this issue of the so-called doc fix enraged some Democrats yesterday, that the Republicans wanted to make sure that the doctors got their reimbursements, which have been in bills to cut, but basically been eliminated or lessened by Republican opposition to that. And by the way, this much of the $22.5 billion is going to be in cuts, basically, to doctors roughly 10 years down the road, which frankly extends us out to 2022, 2023. So that's this is not a major bill, basically, in a sense. It's a step forward, but it certainly does not address the issue of national debt.
And there was no tax increases that the Democrats had been calling for.
That's what you there's no technical tax increases, but if you listen to the opposition, the conservative interest groups, there are fee increases here, which in fact there is an airline passenger security fee of $5 for a round trip, for example. That's where some of the fee money comes from. There's a provision which in fact is going to require guarantee pension benefit firms to have to pay an increase in their fees, basically. There's an increase in federal employee contribution to the retirement, which means basically a net saving to some degree. And the part that I thought was most interesting is that military retirement is built into this, that there will be a cut basically in military retirement in the future. Right now, military retirement goes up basically with the cost of living. And what the provision apparently says is that the retirement will go up with the cost of living minus 1%, which really those are the major fees. Now it is a fee, a tax, and it's a question of how you want to look at that.
Here's an email from Jane. There was bad weather in Washington yesterday, and the government was shut down. I don't recall the media making a big deal about this shutdown or that it affected our world. So why is it earth-shattering when it partially shuts down for a short amount of time over budget issues?
Well, roughly one half the people in the United States get some benefit out of government very directly, but the other half do not. And the effect is, depending on how you look at the government shutdown, it made government look bad, frankly. But if you basically don't believe in government services and government, the role of government, the very basic role of government, if you don't believe in that, you like to sequester and you like the cuts in across the board, basically. And that's kind of the rub here.
Just a minute to our final minute here. Your thoughts on House Budget Chair Paul Ryan coming to this agreement with Patty Murray from Washington?
Well, I applaud it. It's a bipartisan approach. One of the difficulties of Congress getting anything done these days. So this is a small step in the right direction. The interesting element to this is that some of the people who are talked about being potential presidential candidates, the Marco Rubios and Rand Pauls of the world, and we haven't heard from all of them yet, they are immediately opposed to this because they see this as something that's not going to benefit them with the conservatives and the Tea Party groups. Paul Ryan, essentially by supporting this, basically in some respects has taken himself off the list of potential candidates for the presidency. That he's doing his work as a congressman, but this isn't necessarily going to help him in party primaries in 2014.
Thank you so
much. 2016.
Yeah, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
Joe Heim, professor of political science at UW La Crosse. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Christy Taylor for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.